Welcome to Living the Dream Outdoors, the official podcast of Living the Dream Outdoor Properties. We live by the motto, it's not just land, it's a lifestyle. And we live the outdoor lifestyle every day. Whether you're a landowner or dreaming of joining the ranks of those closest to the earth, we're your brothers and sisters of the outdoors. We hunt, we fish, we're stewards of the land. And our Living the Dream team will show you the way to enjoying the land and all the outdoor pursuits it has to offer. Here's your host, Bill Cooper.
Welcome to Living the Dream Outdoor Podcast. I'm your host, Bill Cooper. Hey, we're right in the middle of the Missouri bear season, and I am one tickled human being. I'm 76 years old, and I finally drew a bear tag. It's unbelievable. I didn't think it would have ever happened. Of course, I'm just a wee bit disappointed because I would much rather have had an elk tag. I've hunted and killed bears before, but I've never hunted or killed bears in the state of Missouri. And I may not, but time season's over either. But I'm sitting in the home of a longtime friend here, Joe Hollingshad. He's down in southwest Missouri. What are you closest to? Drury mailing address. What else is close, Joe?
Ava, Mountain Grove, West Plains, Gainesville. We're about in the middle of all that.
Okay, and this is Douglas County.
It's Douglas County, Boger County.
Yeah, it's Zone 1?
Zone 1.
That's where most of the bears have been taken in the last. How long has bear season been going on, Rick?
I believe it's 5 years now.
About 5 years. And the majority of the bears have been taken out of Zone 1. And, Rick, I know I'm just going to butcher your last name something terrible.
Rick Longnecker.
Longnecker. Now, everybody out there in the audience, raise your hand if you've ever heard that name. I don't see anybody. but that is such an unusual name, and you gave me a brief history about that name. I'm always curious about names I haven't heard before. I made the statement it wasn't German, and I was almost wrong, right?
I believe they say it's Swiss, and the family was originally Mennonites, and there's a river and a region in Switzerland called the Langeneg, which is the name is Langenegge. And then, you know, the Census Bureau over the however many hundreds of years got it into, I think actually there's Longnecker, Longgunnecker, and Longacre spelled two different ways.
Now, Longacre I have heard before, but Longnecker is a new one. I thought maybe you was a rep for Budweiser.
They should have been paying me for years.
I'm sure glad I got a simple name like Hollingshad.
Yeah,
you guys. Well, we know when everybody came across the big waters, you know, and they came to the new United States of America, there are a lot of names that got butchered and anglicized. You know, we're famous for that. And, of course, we think English is such a great, great language, but it's one of the most difficult languages in the world to learn. They tell me, you know, I've worked with the romantic languages just a little bit, and I found out they weren't near as romantic as they led me to believe.
No,
you know, because I found them to be rather difficult. But we're talking bear hunting in this first segment, and Rick, you've been out after them a lot heavier than I have been. How have you approached this bear season?
Well, you know, I thought the prep work would be the way to go, so we ran cameras and played around with trying to locate them, and we had three or four different bears on camera, and then somewhere middle of September, they just decided to change their pattern and disappear on us.
Yeah, what do you blame that on? We've all got an excuse, you know, but I'm sure I've just been around you for a couple of days, and I find that you're death on detail. So you've got, I'm sure, some reasoning behind why these bears just disappeared. Like whitetails do they have an October lull like whitetail deer?
Well, so my understanding, and I'm sure the experts out there will correct me, but the Missouri bears right now are trying to put on over 20,000 calories a day. And
that's
about
a lot of calories.
Yeah, well, they say, I think what I remember, I hope I'm remembering it right, is 20 to 50,000 calories a day. So also about that middle of September, our oak tree started stress shedding the acorns a little early. The white oak started mid-September, and they're usually, what, Joe, mid-October?
Yeah, mid-October.
Yeah.
And then I've noticed this week that the white oaks and red oaks are about done, and the post oaks and blackjacks are dropping already, and that's usually into December. So I think everything's going to be a little different this year, not just bear. But I'm sure the bears are off scarping up their acorns. I read, you know, the internet is a wonderful thing. I was sitting there waiting for a bear to come along, and it's like 20,000 calories eating acorns. That's got to be a bunch of acorns.
So how many calories in 1 acre? Have you figured it out?
I got on the Google machine.
Here we go. I knew.
And believe it or not, an ounce of acorns has, I believe it was roughly 110 calories.
110 into.
And I think like a big white oak acorn ought to be an ounce. I was going to pick some up the other day and put them on my reloading scale, and I've forgotten to do it. But even if it's 2 or 3 acorns, it's not near as many as I thought. I think if it's 2 acorns to an ounce, it's about 800. But don't quote me on my math in public.
Yeah, but that's still a lot of acorns. You take a pile of 800 mm-hmm. big acorns. That's a pretty good mass. Well, Joe Hollingshed, you've been here on a farm right in this region all your life.
Yes.
Yeah, mm-hmm. pretty much. So you know this country like the back of your hand. They didn't call him Walkabout Joe for no reason.
No. You've turkey hunted with him, evidently.
Bingo. Yeah. And I've always been a walker all my life, prided mm-hmm. myself mm-hmm. in that fact. But this guy, I was born and raised in the swamps, you know, kind of flat land. Mm-hmm. And these hills almost did me in when I was following him turkey hunting, you know. I was almost ashamed of myself. I didn't think there was anybody that could outwalk me. I should have known a hillbilly would be able to, mm-hmm. you know. But wore out a few boots in your lifetime then, I guess.
Yes, I have.
Okay, so yeah, I know I've been with you enough, been down here at media camps and here at Devil's Backbone Outfitters, you still call it, I guess.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And been around for a long time, and I've got my grandson Ronnie Austin with me. I've told him, and I think I told Gary as well, that I remember the first time I ever heard of Joe Hollingshed. There was an article came out in the old Hunting and Fishing Journal that Ron Kruger, I think, edited at the time.
Yeah. Good old Kruger.
Oh, yeah. He was a dandy, wasn't he? I really miss that guy. He actually lived with me about 18 months at one time in his life. But did Charlie Farmer write that article?
Charlie Farmer wrote the article for the Fishing Hunting Journal, yes.
Yes, but it was an incredible story. I guess you guys had packed into the Devil's Backbone Wilderness, set up a turkey camp, and the striking photo, still my favorite outdoor photograph of all time, big old red horse, as I remember.
A lineback dun mule.
A mule. I keep calling his mule the horse.
That's an insult.
Now. Yeah, big insult.
Yeah, but
you're going to go walk about again.
Yeah, no kid. Big old critter, you know, but there's an enormous gobbler hanging off the saddle horn as well. And if I remember right, there might have been a 10 in the background. But anyway, just a striking photograph because I was just really getting into turkey hunting. I thought, that's got to be the coolest way to turkey hunt I've ever seen in my entire life. Well, I had to find out who Joe Hollingshed was, and I'm thinking, and I was writing for Game and Fish Publications at the time, and eventually, you know, over the years, I don't know how many turkey stories we've done, and of course, I came back a few times with Ray Eye and Media Camps, and even came back with that honorary character, Tim Jeldovic, at one point, and Joe, we had, I think, the most, without a doubt, the most incredible bow hunt and deer hunt I've ever been on in my life. Of course, Tim's one of those characters that's depth on detail as well, and he was pretty picky about where he wanted to hunt.
Yes, he was. It's you know, after about the third day we was in, I was beginning to sweat bullets with Tim, because you know, about when things are winding down, you as a guide, you begin to feel the pressure.
Absolutely. That's why I never got in that business.
Yeah, you're obligated and it gets worse. But I was sure glad that, you know, we made the right moves and it all worked out for Tim, and the filming was great. You done a great job on that filming. And
I thought so too. The way Tim worked me.
Yeah.
Did, you know, first setup we had or made was up on a high flat top ridge, oak trees all around. And Tim wanted me in the same tree as him, which meant I was going to have to be above him. So I wound up shinnying like 40 feet up a black oak tree with a climbing tree stand. Well, I come to a big knot at about 30 feet, and I just stopped. Tib looked at me and said, "No, you got to go higher." I had to take that stand apart. Yeah, to get
around that knot.
Knot, man. And I got up there, and he ended up away. We saw a few smaller bucks and stuff. But then, you know, got dark and time to get down. Tim, he just zips down that tree, and you stand down there, and I'm clanking around up there. "What are you doing?" That's Tim. "You got to come up here and get me, man. I can't get down."
Yeah, I remember when I drove up with the ATV, Tim was standing on the ground looking up you, and I said, "Where's Bill?" He said, "He's still up the tree."
Man, I was about to give out the time I got back down that tree. But I was really happy, and y'all had the discussion. We made a move day or two later, moved off another ridge down to the side of it. And then the problem we had, a lot of blackjacks and I don't know what all there, black oaks, and we was having a tough time finding a tree big enough to put a climber on. And sure wasn't two of us going to get in the same tree. Now, that tickled me pink. I wasn't going to have to go 40 feet high again. But I got on a little black oak tree that wasn't very big around at all, and about 8 feet was high as I could get, and I was just worried if deer came from down the slope, I was going to be eyeball to eyeball with some of them at some point. Well, it didn't take long for that to happen. We spotted a big buck up in the edge of a field, I don't know what that was, 100 yards away or more, and several does with them. In a few minutes, one of those does ran down that hill, stopped, eye level with me, staring, I mean, our eyes met, you know, and I thought, "Oh my goodness, I'm going to blow this whole deal, and Tim's going to shoot me right out of this tree stand," you know. But that doe hung around for the whole time, and it took probably 45 minutes, Rick, for that buck to work his way down, and all those does come down and made a 12-yard shot. And what'd you say that buck scored? You remember? Close to 170.
It was up around the 170s, Bill. Yeah. One of the probably nicest bucks for his horns and everything. It really matched out good. It was a beautiful mount.
It really was. It was a beautiful critter. The video footage was just awesome because we had so much footage. But what was really incredible about that, I was doing a little work for Outdoor Life magazine at the time. I got that buck in Outdoor Life magazine. And boy, was Tim, everybody was tickled, you know, including myself. And it was just an interesting and very rewarding experience altogether. But, Joe, looking back on all that and the turkey camps I came here with Ray, I never dreamed I'd be back here bear hunting one day.
No. I couldn't believe it when you was talking to you. You said, "I got a bear tag."
Yeah, I was just shocked, you know, because I've had trouble the last 4 or 5 years. I'm always applying for these special managed deer hunts and stuff, and I've been drawn in several years and never gotten an elk tag, you know, and I've tried to convince MDC that they just handled that all wrong. The bear season and the elk season both should only be for people 70 years old. I'm not going to have very many chances.
Yeah.
After 4 days of chasing bear, I'm going to tell you that I'm thinking the bear needs to be for people 30 and under.
I might tend to agree with you, but after talking to you, of course, I read up and it suggested that, you know, you prepare yourself to walk 8 to 10 miles a day here in the Ozarks to hunt for bears because the regulations are there's no baiting. You can't run them with dogs. And it seems like they make it as difficult as you can. If you get a black bear in Missouri, you will have earned it.
You've earned it. I've 4 days. I think we're 4 days in. I've racked up over 30 miles.
Wow. Yeah, but you've got legs 6 feet long. And I talked to him, and I knew he was doing – he must have read the same book I did, the same information, put that walking in, you know. But, of course, you guys had several bears on camera here on the farm, and bingo, the acorns fall, and the bears scatter out, and nothing on camera anymore. You don't have a clue where they are.
Well, and you know, Bill, the problem with hunt the acorns, you know, you can say hunt the acorns. There's 1,500 acres here, and there's an oak tree every 20 feet. So which acorns am I supposed to go hunt?
The best ones. That's
well,
where the bears are going to be.
If I knew which ones those were, I would have been sitting there till dark. But
exactly. But met you the first day, and I listened to you. You remember, I told you, "Oh, this old man's not walking 8 to 10 miles. So I've got my grandson along with me. And, of course, he got seeing all these deer, and I had a crossbow. Well, I'm almost forgot about bear hunting. I've been tagging along with him and kind of helping him out with a deer hunting situation, just hoping a bear might come along. I said, "Bear comes along while we're in the stand, just hand me the crossbow." So that's been the extent of my bear hunting. But what a great time. This is just a beautiful, beautiful place that Joe Hollingshead has got. And Joe, I told you, gosh, how many years has it been since I've been here last?
Been a long time, Bill.
Been too long, I know that. But boy, you've done so much work here. It's just an incredibly beautiful place. Food plots all over the place, and everywhere I go, I say, man, I'd like to sit in that deer stand too. That blind looks pretty good. You know, and it's, just walking here by yourself, it'd be a terrible dilemma to try to decide which direction to go. But Joe was kind enough, Rick, when we came in, he offered to let us camp here in Civilization up close to the house, you know. Well, Ronnie and I both, we don't get a lot of opportunities to get out and camp together, so, and we want to get back in the sticks. And he took us to the perfect place up on top of a ridge and nice, pretty nice little road going up there. And just, you can just sit and listen to the acorns dropping in the woods. And he just talks constantly, you know. We're going, well, boy, this is good. Deer do this here. They go there, here, you know. And bingo, he's dead on. We have seen so many deer. It's just incredible. Poor Ronnie, I think his eyes are crossed. You know?
Well, I'm glad you're seeing deer. It's always, you know, we talk about trophy deer and everybody, you know, even me when I was growing up, I always wanted a buck, you know. Yeah. But I've learned through our customers that has come in and clientele that, you know, a trophy is different in everybody's eyes.
Absolutely. And, I'm glad you said that.
And that's a thing. At first, I didn't quite understand that, but you know, I've had people that come in and just killed a doe, mm-hmm. and was just you know, out of their mind because they killed a doe. You know, they didn't have to have horns.
Yeah, exactly. And I've gotten more that way as I've gotten older.
Yep.
Well, I have too. I like deer meat to eat.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I do too.
You know, now I just harvest, or we try to harvest big old does that need to be taken out. You know, I'd still yet shoot a good buck if I could get one bigger than I've got hanging on the wall, you know. But a wife said, unless he's bigger than what you got hanging on the wall, he passes, you know.
So, and I manage a chunk of ground south of here. It's about 660 acres. And, you know, we don't grow great big deer here, but what we always aim for is those mature bucks. If I can get one 5 or 6 on my place, you know, because this is not the land of all your neighbors let them pass. So, you know, we've got a good chunk of ground and a lot of habitat, so our bucks usually stay. And, man, if we can get a 5 or 6-year-old, that's a trophy. It doesn't matter what he's wearing. But then the other thing, I read a thing on Facebook a couple years ago. A guy posted a picture of a button buck. And he said, I've been hunting all my life. I've killed hundreds of deer, and this is my favorite.
Really?
And I'm like, okay, what's the rest of the story? So I click, and the rest of the story is he shot that deer with a bow that he had made, with a string that he had made, with an arrow that he had made, with a arrowhead that he had flint napped, and with fletching that he had made and put on there himself. And I thought, man, if I had had that, that thing had been a full body mount button buck in the corner of my trophy room, you know, because that was his, you know. And he said I've killed 180 inch deer. This is my proudest deer. And that was a perspective moment for me.
Absolutely. And I'm happy you brought that up, because just before I came over here from camp, I was on Facebook, you know, as usual, looking, and some guy was talking about the fact that his dream was to find an arrowhead, put it on a shaft that he had made, and kill a deer with it. And he'd been talking to a gentleman all the way out in Pennsylvania who had done just that.
Wow.
So he spent decades hunting. He's done the same thing, kill the big deer. But we evolve as hunters. You know, you can remember when you were young, boy.
Oh.
You just want to pull that trigger, you know. You want to hear it go pop, and you want to see something fall. And then it got to be a bag limit. You know, I had to have a limit, you know. But we progress. We get into that method stage. I know Joe's been through that. He's a mountain man type, mm-hmm. you know, and loves to get out and do his thing with things of the past, you know, and relive history and that sort of thing. But as we get older, we mellow out a little bit, don't we, Grandpa?
Yeah, slightly. Yeah.
So, of course, you've guided people for decades. You've watched people have good times and make memories for them. And I'm doing that with my grandson now, and I've done it with a number of grandchildren. And I could tell you the story of every one of my grandkids killing their first deer. You know, that's just incredible to watch that. And I've got a granddaughter coming this year. I think she's 23 now, bringing her fiance and going to deer hunt with them this year. Of course,
do I need to come over and talk to him and make sure we want to keep him around? Or,
well, I talked to her and I informed her that I do always carry a big stick.
Okay.
You know, so and I know how to use it.
So and I think that, you know, and I think as hunters, you know, Joe and I were talking as we were checking cattle earlier, you know, hunting has kind of become a rich man's game. And I grew up in a house where rifle season was our holiday, mm-hmm. you know, you probably remember my grandma and grandpa would have 30 hunters come in from everywhere. They'd be sleeping on the floor everywhere. Oh, yeah. And that was deer season. It was a big deal. And that was back when you could kill one buck in Missouri.
Exactly.
That was what you got.
But what memories were made there, man? Just incredible family and friend memories. And, you know, I can remember the day when I could drive south from, you know, 44. I live up close to 44, Cuba, Missouri. Lived in St. James for 40-something years. But you can head south down 19 or 63, hit all this national forest land. You just see deer camp yep. after deer camp after deer camp. That seems to be...
Well, it's all leases now and big money. And, you know, we're
kind of gone by the wayside.
We're our own worst enemy. And I don't want to poke you two in the eye, but the average hunter is y'all's age. And we're not recruiting our kids and our grandkids very well. And
that's exactly right.
I'm going to get on my soapbox a little bit.
What's he mean by you guys' age?
Yeah.
Well, y'all are a couple of years older than me.
Yeah.
But not a bunch anymore, but a couple.
But here's a sad fact, and you guys, being in the business and being such outdoorsmen, probably know the figures, but a tad of 4% of Americans hunt anymore.
Yep.
4%, about 16% fish. But the good news is, here in Missouri, of course, I brag on our Missouri Department of Conservation most of the time. I don't agree with everything they do, but they have brought our deer and turkey back. And until just very recent years, we were still gaining hunters and fishermen in the state of Missouri. Now it's kind of stabilized and flatlined, but most states are losing them. That's the reason a lot of state conservation departments are in trouble, because they depend on that license sales for their finances. But here in Missouri, we all pay the price, you know, the 1/8 of 1% sales tax, and I'm delighted to pay it. I suspect it probably cost me less than $200 a year, and we've got what we have.
Yeah, look at your $200. What's it got you, though, Bill?
Oh, absolutely.
Look what you can do.
Absolutely. You know? But this bear tag cost me $25. Isn't that incredible?
$35.
Well, the $10 application fee, okay. My math's not good either.
Well, and I was doing the math this morning as I was sitting there waiting for Fluffy, which is the name of the big bear that we had on camera, to come up the holla. And I was like, well, let's see. I paid $10 last year and $10 a year before and $10 a year before.
Me too.
But that's still a pretty cheap bear tag, because when I hunted bear 30-some years ago in Alaska, I think as a resident that tag was – I don't even remember, $100, $150.
Oh, yeah, I know. We went to New Brunswick a couple of times, and for me and my wife both to hunt, I mean, it was easily a $5,000 or $6,000 trip. Yep. Plus, you know, man, that long, long drive. We flew once, because after driving once, I'll never do that again.
So.
But an incredible experience. I'm glad we did it. But, man, this is icing on the cake to even get drawn. I feel like a serious bear hunter now. Yeah. I got a tag. But hey, guys, I'll tell you what, we're having a tremendous time here, but don't leave us. We're just going to take a short break here, but we're going to be right back with more Living the Dream Outdoors podcast.
Our forefathers gave us a Bill of Rights. One of those is the right to step in the front door of Pond Center, where the faint sound of eagles screeching from on high a bounding purple mountain's majesty browse the walls full of glorious firearms. It's hard not to shed a patriotic tear as your red, white, and blue blood becomes fortified by the sight of true freedom. Pond Center, located at 408 Highway 72 East in Rolla, Missouri. Or give us a call at 573-426-GUNS.
Hey, this is John from CoAngler.com. Did you know that CoAngler.com is the newest online platform to connect anglers for fishing trips? You can create your free account, offer and request fishing trips, connect with anglers in your area, share some costs, share some knowledge, and share a great time in the outdoors. Whether you're fishing from a boat and you got an extra seat and want somebody to come with you, or you need some help shuttling those kayaks for your next float trip, CoAngler is a great way to connect with like-minded anglers in your area for a great time out on the water. So get on CoAngler.com and let's go fishing.
Hey there, listeners. At Conservation Federation of Missouri, we're more than just advocates for our environment. We're active in making a difference through hands-on programs that protect and preserve Missouri's natural resources. By becoming a member, you're supporting impactful initiatives like Share the Harvest, which provides venison to families in need, and Operation Game Thief, which helps combat poaching and protects our wildlife. You're also contributing to the RISPR grants, which fund local conservation projects across the state. Your membership makes these vital programs possible, ensuring that we continue to serve both our communities and our environment. Plus, as a member, you'll receive updates on these programs, invitations to exclusive events, and the opportunity to get involved in the work you care about most. Visit confedmo.org/join to learn more and to join us today. Together, we can support programs that protect Missouri's wildlife, waters, and way of life. Be a part of the Conservation Federation of Missouri, where action leads to conservation.
Hey everyone, this is Michael Collins with Misty Mountains Guiding Service. I'm here to talk to you a little bit about what we offer. Misty Mountains is a smallmouth and trout-specific guiding service that caters to the Northern Ozarks region. My areas include the Upper Merrimack River, the Gasconade, and a few smaller creeks in the Mid-Missouri area. Whether you enjoy casting streamers to bass, drifting a dry fly, or ripping lips with spinning gear, I've got you covered. Fishing is made easy in my state-of-the-art drift boat raft. I control the boat with ease while you or yourself and a buddy do all the work at catching fish. Besides a great day on the water, I provide all needed gear, a delicious shore lunch, and as much fishing knowledge as you can carry with you on the way home. Spots for the 2024 season are going fast. Give me a call or text today to get your trip booked. My number is 573-823-9057. Find me on Facebook and Instagram at Misty Mountains Guiding Service. It's always an adventure with Misty Mountains.
This is Dan from the White Buffalo Fly Shop, your gateway to Missouri's blue ribbon trout streams and world-class smallmouth water. Whether you're headed to Mill Creek, the Kern, or the Gasconade, we've got the flies, the gear, and the local know-how to help you fish with confidence. If you're looking to sharpen your casting skills, join one of our hands-on clinics. Or if you'd like to craft your own fly rod, build it with us in one of our rod building courses. You're always welcome in our fly tying nights to swap stories, share patterns, and get the latest hatch reports. White Buffalo Fly Shop is more than just a place to gear up. It's a hub for our local community. You'll find us at 605 North Pine Street in Rolla or online at whitebuffaloflyshop.com.
Hey everybody, this is Alex Rutledge with American Roots Outdoors. Check out my buddy's podcast show, Living the Dream Outdoors with Bill Cooper and Hunter Heineman. You're really going to enjoy this week's show.
Welcome back to Living the Dream Outdoor Podcast. I hope you enjoyed that first segment. We certainly had a good time.
You bet.
And guys, we have just barely touched the tip of the iceberg of the things that we love. I'm here with an old friend, Joe, from way back. Rick, brand new friend, couple of days. But I've discovered something. I think we're three peas in a pod.
I think we are.
Yeah.
We
just about.
Sitting here in the break, and we're talking about how blessed we have been because we love what we do. We love the outdoors. We love how we grew up. We all came up in hunting families. And now the two old timers are the three peas in the pod. Rick, hunting wasn't just a form of recreation for us. It was a necessity for us. We put meat on the table, you know. I still remember the first squirrel I ever killed with a .22 rifle. Came home, I was so proud of myself. And I can, first few coon hunts, I remember the first coon I shot out of a 125-foot tall cypress tree, you know. And, man, I'm 10, 11 years old, but I felt like a man. There was really a rite of passage that you went through with those old timers. And, man, and they could be rough on you, couldn't you, Rick?
They sure could. They taught you how you learned the best.
Absolutely. But, of course, my dad was a World War II vet. Joe, wasn't your dad a vet?
Yeah, he was.
Absolutely. Yeah. And particularly those guys, you know, my dad just fascinated me with how he could shoot. But he spent 13 weeks on a rifle range. Mm-hmm. I was an Army officer. You know how many days I spent on the rifle range?
Half.
4 days.
Oh, 4 days. Well, you must have been a lying officer then.
A lie? Did he say lying?
Yeah,
no, lying.
I don't know what you
Yeah, my dad, you know, like I say, I was really fortunate to grow up in a family that hunted. My dad, growing up, I didn't really realize it at the time because I was too young. But as I got older, I realized my dad was one of the best shots in the country. I have many, many people told me that. And he's one of the best trackers. I remember people coming to the house and saying, Joe, you help us. We've shot this deer. We can't find it. Dad'd find that thing, you know, right off the bat.
Now, I'm going to make a correction because I'm pretty sure your mom was a better shot than your dad.
Yeah, mom was a good shot.
And your mom had spot deer that nobody else could find.
That's correct. That's correct. But, you know.
Well, no wonder you're as good as you are, Joe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, at one time I could consider myself pretty good, but now I'm with the flow now. You know, let someone else take the honors of that. But, no, my dad taught me a lot about hunting, and I took it a step further than he ever did, you know.
Yeah.
I was just like you said, I love it. I love the passion of being in nature. And, you know, you think I've done seminars and people come up, well, you must know everything there are to know about turkey hunting, deer hunting. I said, no. I said, every day I go out, they teach me something else that, you know, you never get too old to learn.
You certainly don't. And the thing is, you know, every time you go out there, it's like a different scenario, you know. And you've seen it. You go out one day and, boy, you can just make those gobblers dance. And the next day, you wonder where they are.
Yeah.
You know, they're not listening to me today.
Yeah.
But that is the great fascination. There's just so many aspects of this wonderful outdoor world that come into play. And I can't imagine my life without it, you know. Hey, I had job offers in the city. I could have made a lot more money and that sort of thing. But I literally didn't think I could survive in that kind of a situation.
Well, I know you've seen a lot more than I have because you've been out a lot of more places. You know, there is so much to see in our outdoors. I mean, it's just tremendous, and there's beautiful things out there to see, and especially in these Ozark Mountains. I've seen stuff. I'm not very good at taking pictures, but I wish I'd have had something to, because there's stuff out there that you just don't see every day. You know,
absolutely. And still, as old as I am, one of my favorite things to see is the sunrise.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm up early every morning. You're sitting on the back porch drinking coffee, waiting for that sun to come up. And it's just, but you get out on a place like yours, get on those high hills. I've watched the sun come up every morning in the last 2 or 3 days. And during the night, coyotes wake me up howling, you know.
Well, just like it's seated before we come in, hoot owls.
Mm-hmm.
All of them started, you know. Yep. Cackling and hooting.
And as much as I hate them and have cussed them this week, I do enjoy just sitting up on an oak flat and watching 20 gray squirrels just get after it. Now, I want to murder them all when I'm trying to hunt, but at the same time, if you just take a breath and go, well, watch that little guy.
Absolutely. You
know? And
they're busy little critters.
Oh, they are.
And,
they are.
And of course, you don't notice them as much, I don't think, until deer season comes along and they're working behind you. You know, Ronnie was talking about this. There's a deer coming behind us.
Nope, but way too much noise.
Yeah. It's just a gray squirrel. It sounds like 20 deer coming. Uh-huh. But, yeah, incredible, incredible, incredible. But the three of us, we've got, wow, figured up 70. And how old are you, Rick?
Well, let's just call it 200 years.
200 years of outdoor experience sitting right here. And I'm pretty well convinced that three of us could get our heads together and write a pretty fascinating outdoor book.
Does it have to be true?
No, I didn't say that.
Yeah, it'd be great then.
I never brought that up. I get accused of that quite often, you know. And that's another spinoff of the whole thing, the storytelling and all that sort of thing. But we've kicked several things around here during the intermission there. But one of the things that's near and dear to all our hearts, we want to see the hunting tradition continue. And all of us have played a part in that. And I want to say a pretty big part, you know. Joe has educated, wow.
Thousands
over the years with the things that he knows about the outdoors, the turkey hunting and the deer hunting. And Rick, you've worked with some organizations as well. Who have you worked with in the past?
So one of the big ones I worked with when I lived in Kansas was Outdoor Mentors. It's all about kids, usually underprivileged city, inner city kids that don't get the chance to hunt, getting them out. And then since moving here to Missouri, Outdoor Mentors is just kind of getting started. And being a vet, I jumped in with the Fallen Outdoors and tried to do a great group. Yeah, I tried to do a bunch of hunts with them. Got a big one planned this year. We're going to do 2 weekends, 10 vets each weekend. Some nice people have donated their land in exchange for helping manage some does. And we're actually I think it's going to be a first for me, maybe a first for a lot of people. We're going to dedicate one of the houses both weekends. It's going to be all female vets. So
really?
Yep. Looking really forward to that, but I got to get through youth deer and rifle deer and bow, and then we'll start thinking about that one.
So,
and bear season, that's still got to get.
Oh yeah, we're still working on bear season, and like I said, I've gotten a little sidetracked with that, but these organizations are so important. I've worked with a number of them over the years. One I'm working with right now is the Missouri Hunting Heritage Federation, and they do, youth hunts all over the state of Missouri, and I helped with one last year. We held the first deer hunt at Merrimack Spring Park, which is owned by the James Foundation. We're going to do another one in a couple of weeks here. And, boy, if you go out in a blind with these kids and help and watch, and it's just an incredible experience. And, it takes me back to the days of my youth. Because maybe I think I get excited about a deer walking up or a turkey gobbling, But boy, oh boy, do some of these kids get the shakes. Remember those days?
Oh, well, and what's interesting is I think it was last year, 2 years ago, I was hunting with a friend of mine's son. He brought both of his boys out to hunt, and he took the younger one. I took the older one. We're sitting in a nice, fancy shooting house that I built. And boy, I'm just having the hardest time getting that kid to sit still and focus and pay attention. And when they left, I went to my dad's house, and I'm like, I don't know how you did it, but thank you. Because, he did all that. Sitting on the ground. There wasn't no fancy shooting blinds or things to hide me. We sat on the ground, and I can remember the dirty looks and the, gritted teeth. But how did he teach me, a spastic young kid that couldn't be quiet or sit still for nothing, to sit still and be quiet and hunt? I think he just got tired of it and turned me loose.
That only apply to kids.
Yeah.
I've had hunters that was,
Yeah.
I just couldn't believe they'd get, we'd try to shoot the turkey and they'd be drawn circle the size of the dish pan. You're going to have to pull that in a little bit tighter.
No. You just time it. They teach you that.
Timing. Absolutely. But I can remember when Ronnie first started hunting with me, and he's a little hyperactive, and we were sitting in a blind one time. Thank goodness we were in a blind. You can get away with more there. But I actually started timing him. He moved, on average, every 3 seconds.
Mm-hmm.
Every 3 seconds.
Oh, him and I do good in the stand together, because I don't know if I make it 3 seconds.
Yeah, well, I laughed today that I was thinking about that. We were setting up in a double tree stand that Joe had put up, and we started seeing deer at 5 o'clock all the way up to dark. They were there. And he had fished it a little bit. Well, we got a doe and a fawn 10 yards from us, fed there for 20, 30 minutes, And we were almost afraid to breathe. And when they finally left, he said, I can never remember sitting that still for that long.
I learned several years ago in Kansas, taking one of my friend's kids. I took both of his boys in the same stand, and oh my goodness, they were snackers.
Oh yeah.
And what I learned was it was early rut. When they'd need a snack, I'd start rattling.
There you go.
Like, you've got until I'm done rattling to move and snack and make all the noise you want. And when the rattle stops,
that's a good.
Well, and then another tip I learned, a friend of my dad's, when I was little, he always took a book hunting. And I learned later he was like me. He's as hyper as can be. And he'd sit there in a stand and he'd read. And when he got to the bottom paragraph, he'd scan.
Uh-huh.
And then he'd read.
Uh-huh.
And then he'd scan. I'd do the same. I sit in the stand and read. I'll go through 10 books during deer season.
Is that right?
Otherwise, I can't be still.
Of course, we all have an extra appendage these days. What's everybody carries mm-hmm. to the stands with?
Mm-hmm.
Good old cell phones, And we probably messed up a few deer and turkey hunts because of those. But talking about the kids, one of my most memorable stories, I had a stepson who was very hyperactive. Took him turkey hunting when he was about 10 years old. He wanted to go. And so, I was at blind. And it was one of those cool, drizzly mornings, you know, and I knew when we went, we probably wasn't going to hear a single turkey gobble. We set up kind of the edge of the woods, big field out in front of us, and there were a lot of turkeys on the place, and we called at daylight, nothing happened, you know, and within 15 minutes, he's down the floor, the blind he played with every stick, rock, bug, and everything, and even pulled some Hot Wheels out of his pockets, you know. I just let it go, you know, and I kept scanning the fields, and I know Joe uses this technique, but a lot of times in springtime when nothing's gobbling, I'll use a lost call just like you use in the fall. And those two-year-old birds will come to that, never gobble. Well, it'd been 20 or 30 minutes since I'd give that last long lost call. Looked up, here's a big gobbler coming across the field, headed right straight to us. I'm going, coach, I got excited at that point, you know. Hey, get up your seat, and had a single shot 20 gauge, I think, you know. And this turkey man, and he's got the shakes, and you just got to calm down, man. Takes a deep breath. Went through the whole cycle on a turkey, 40, 30, still coming, you know. It's a pull hammer back. Well, he was so excited he couldn't get the hammer pulled back.
I'm getting excited just listening to this.
So I had to help him get the hammer back, and I thought, oh, we're going to spook that gobbler. I mean, it's less than 15 yards, and I just clucked, and, of course, it stopped, and I said, shoot him. He takes a breath, and he goes, that's who? He sneezed real big. The turkey's gone. He cried. He got home. He said, guess what, Mom? She said, what is it? I blew a turkey away. Oh, my goodness. You know, you thought, oh, of course, I felt just a smidge of disappointment because he didn't get that bird, but that boy's up in his 30s now. And if I've heard him tell that story one time, I've heard it 100 times, you know. But that kind of stuff lives on and on and on. That's a story he'll tell his grandkids. And I think it's what it's all about. That's what we're trying to, each one of us is trying to accomplish. And I know there's thousands of other outdoorsmen out there that are doing the same thing. But here in the grand state of Missouri, we've got it better than most. But it's because of a citizenry decades ago that understood and cared, that seen our natural resources depleted. And, buddy, we went to work. And I'm proud to say I sit on the board of the Conservation Federation of Missouri. They're a bit of a watchdog over the conservation department, but it's a citizens' organization made up of about 125 organizations from the state of Missouri, everything from hunters and fishermen and bug chasers and wildflower enthusiasts and whatever. But we come together with a common goal of trying to make things better in Missouri, and we actually come up with proposals for legislation and changes in the Conservation Department rules and all that sort of thing. So if you're looking for an organization to join, that's a great one to join. They have outdoor education section as well. And boy, we listen to a lot of people and get a lot of hard work done for the good of the people in the state of Missouri. But guys, I tell you what, as old as we are, we're still enjoying the outdoors, and we each one of us have our individual interests, yet we have, you know, some common goals. But Joe, looking to the future here with your Devil's Backbone Outfitters, I know you got a son, you got grandsons, and what are you hoping for the future?
Well, of course, you know, I still active in the outfitting business but I mainly turned it over to my son Chance, you know, and he showed an interest in it, and I said, well, if you want to pursue this, I'll help you and what I know, you know, and so he's pretty well taking it over. He's running it. You know, I'm old style and he's new style. So you know this. When I first got in the business, if you got in a magazine, that's a big deal.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Well, nowadays there's no magazine. It's all YouTube or whatever.
Yep, social media.
Social media, you know. And it's high tech. And that high tech has helped us a bunch you know, they've come out with all the stuff. But we was talking to some people the other day and was talking about, I've killed more turkey in a pair of plated out blue jeans and a plaid shirt than, you know, most people ever kill in camo. But it's, you know, I've been in this business for 45 years now. Don't seem like that, but I have been.
Wow.
And, but so much has changed, you know, And I'm, in my personal opinion, I've seen, I see a lot of women, everything's, and it's great that women's taking an interest. I remember first time, and that was back early, I had two or three women come in to hunt. And I was really surprised. They were diehard hunters. They wouldn't know panty waist to them. You know, they wanted to hunt.
Absolutely. And,
but, you know, I've seen a lot of stuff change in the last 20, 25 years as far as what hunting has evolved around. And, you know, I want to see it keep going. I want to see my grandkids enjoy what I see in the outdoors. I try to teach them when I take them out. I try to show them everything, skills, and, you know, it's not, to me, being in the outdoors and hunting is not totally killing something.
Exactly.
Now, when you're a guide, that's your responsibility to make sure your clientele gets what they have come to your place to do it. But there's a part of that is you should just enjoy the whole thing. You know, enjoy the outdoors where they're that whatever you get is just a bonus. It's just a plus. You know, the outdoors is great, and there's so many things, like I said, out there that you see every day that we see. Not every people get that opportunity to see that. You know. And so, you know, I'm just great. I hope my grandkids pick it up and take on. And I've got three grandsons coming up. I've got one that's just now 16, or he'd be 17. So he's taking an interest. And then I've got some more that's younger. So, you know, maybe they'll take an interest in the outfitting business. If they don't, that's okay.
Right.
You know, the outdoors is not for everybody. I understand that, you know. But it's really interesting to see the kids coming on and wanting to take over what you have built up over the years, you know. And so I hope they'll keep the devil's backbone up and going, and Grandpa can just sit on a porch.
talk about the old days.
Cup of coffee.
So let me ask you a question, Bill, because you said the changes,
right,
and we talked about camouflage. What was your first camouflage?
Oh, we talked about this earlier. Of course, I spent a little time in Vietnam and Cambodia. Mm-hmm. I came back with some OD greens and had one set of tiger stripes I'd got my hand on. And
you was fancy.
I was. Nobody this side of the water had seen anything like that, you know, in a turkey hunting.
So I had a set of BDUs. So,
sure.
You know, old school, you know, I'm sure they came from it. But my dad had taken one of them old magic markers with the rings around it and striped them up. And that was my camouflage. And then the other story I was going to tell was on his dad. And it was early in when he was guiding, and you did trout and toms in the spring over on the river.
Oh, yeah.
And I think Gina might have brought them back from the airport or something, brought this group in, and they started getting out of that Suburban. And I was standing there by your dad, and he said, "Looks like a page out of an Orvis catalog."
Bingo. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
I have remembered that.
Well,
40 years?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I was telling Joe just yesterday, a gentleman in St. James, Missouri, one of the best turkey hunters I ever knew of, Lyle Stom, was a local guy, and he actually claimed that he quit turkey hunting because it was too easy. Mm-hmm. But Lyle used to OD greens, and I saw him in his camo one time. He'd cut out some stencils, like dogwood blossom.
Yep.
He had white dogwood blossoms all over him. I said, "Oh, gosh, he's going to get shot. That looks like a turkey's head, you know, from a distance." But different colors and work like a charm. So I admit it. I run around the woods with a few dogwood blossoms painted on my old greens. But
I might go paint me some dogwood blossoms.
Yeah, but how things advanced, and of course, all the camo companies would kill me for saying this, you know. But we know it's absolutely not necessary. But we do like to look stylish, you know. And I laughed. I've got friends in Mexico that I've worked part time down there for the last 15 years, and my current boss, and Jordy Janae, came up to deer hunt with me one time, and he brought a friend of his, and this guy was rather well-to-do too. Small frame guy, you know, dark complected, dark hair, those dark eyes and gleaming white teeth. Little fellow just strapped, man. He put on his camo. He has spent $6,000 in camo to deer hunt with us. He stepped out of the cabin that first morning, and I'm just doing a double take, you know. I said, "Really, dude? did you just step out of a big catalog in there, you know? And he just laughed, you know. But that's what it is to some people, yeah. You know. And I like camo too, but Ray Eye is just the best ever. He got a little upset decades ago because some camo company didn't want to sponsor him, you know. So he just kind of told them all, take a hike, you know. So Ray started wearing just plain grays and tans and greens, you know. And I remember he had a story in Outdoor Life magazine. He was up in New York. Had killed a big old gobbler, and he backed up against one of those rock walls like they have. And he got dozens and dozens of calls and everything, people getting a hold of him, won't know where they could get that rock wall camo.
Bill, and your dad hunted in a red flannel and blue jeans every time I ever saw him.
Yep, all the time. You talked about that guy coming in and costing so much money. We're sitting around camp one night back in there in the wilderness, and we're just sitting around talking, you know. And these guys that were sitting around there had lots of money, you know. They had high-dollar shotguns. And anyway, we sat there, and we said, okay, let's just, for kicks, you know, tell how much you got in your camo, what all you got, you know, to come in here and kill a turkey, you know. Figured it all out. My fees, you know, and the out-of-state fees, and the camo, the boots, the gun, the shells, and everything. It was astounding what some of them had invested, you know, in their camo. We laughed about it. I said, we'd go to Walmart and buy one for $12. Yeah, you
know? If you're studying camo, get your hands on the book called Illumination in the Flatwoods. Can't remember the author's name, but he did a lot of research down in Florida and raised turkeys, you know, from right out of the egg. They imprinted on him and all the the doings he had with this flock of turkeys over 2 or 3 years. He discovered that he wore old faded overalls, you know, that bluish color with them a lot. And he discovered he toyed with colors, and that light blue would calm those turkeys down better than anything. Hmm. What did all the old timers wear that killed a lot of turkeys?
Overalls.
Those faded out
Key overalls.
Denim.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Coveralls. So it works.
Well,
so
I'm not going to give them fellas too much trouble, because last year during thermal season, my buddy and I stopped to get dinner, and I'm like, oh, let's just run in. And then I went, and I'm not going to say the number out loud because my wife might listen to this, but I went, oh, we've got about that much money in equipment, and I think it might be more than my truck was worth. And I was like, I think I'll stay here. You fellas go get a little supper.
Trick to all that, you just hope and pray when you pass away that your wife doesn't sell your stuff for what you told her you paid for it. Oh, my goodness, what fun. You know, only thing that made this better, Joe, is we'd had a campfire right here in the middle of your living room.
Right.
But, boy, we've sat around lots of them. We've told lots of stories, had a great time. But, folks, I hope you just get a little bit of glimpse of the picture of what the outdoors means to this trio sitting here for this podcast this evening. But, hey, all of us, Joe, Rick, myself, Bill Cooper, we are living our outdoor dreams, and we have made it happen, and we know sure as we're sitting here that you can do it too. So get in the outdoors and build some dreams of your own. I'm Bill Cooper.
People love a good mustache. People also love a good firearm. The fine people down at Pond Center like both. They have the largest selections of firearms in the area, and with a friendly, knowledgeable staff of hombres to help you pick the gun that's right for you. You could end up riding into the sunset with a gun you love. Find them at pc72guns.com, on shelf, in store, online, or give them a call at 573-426-GUNS. That's Pond Center. Guns welcome. Mustache appreciated.
Captain Brian Wilson runs one of the tightest bow fishing operations in the business. Stainwater Bow Fishing operates out of Jerome, Missouri, and the beautiful Missouri Ozarks. They cover most Ozark streams and lakes. You haven't lived until you've searched Ozark waters during the night with Stainwater Bow Fishing while looking for giant gar, carp, and buffalo. Captain Wilson also runs a second boat on Taneycomo Lake. Call today to book a trip with Stainwater Bow Fishing at 573-263-8016. Again, that's 573-263-8016. be sure and shoot straight.
The Living the Dream Outdoors podcast is brought to you by Living the Dream Outdoor Properties, The Fly Rod Journals, SmokerBuilder.com, Cowtown USA, Westover Farms, Scenic Rivers Taxidermy, Stained Water Bow Fishing, Scenic Rivers Guide Service and Tours, Huzzah Valley Resort, Pico Lures, Devil's Backbone Outfitters, J&J Charters, Kaufman Cove, Alaska, Bean Creek Game Calls, Misty Mountain Guide Service, ASO Guides and Outfitters with Ryan Walker, Expedition Trailers, The Rambling Angler, and Rich's Famous Burgers.
Land ownership is the American dream. Land is the basis of all life. Our wise use of this most precious of resources ensures the survival and growth of free institutions and our American way of life. At Living the Dream Outdoor Properties, we value the traditions and freedoms that land provides us. Every day we seek the solace of a mountain sunrise over traffic jams and smog, the calming silence of a bubbling stream over the sirens of the city, and the quiet of the countryside over the hustle and bustle of the world. We hunt, we fish, we farm. We live off the land. It's our mission to help our clients live out their dreams on the land as we do. At Living the Dream Outdoor Properties, we believe that it's not just land, it's a lifestyle. Join us 5 days a week on Living the Dream Outdoor Podcast as the Living the Dream Outdoor Dream Team explores the most desired outdoor properties in the Midwest and whisks you away to incredible hunting, fishing, and outdoor recreation opportunities. Host Bill Cooper, an inductee of the National Freshwater Fishing Hall of Fame, will be joined by members of the Living the Dream Outdoors team each week as they tell tall tales, unveil tips and tactics, and rub elbows with some of the biggest names in the outdoor world. You'll also find the Living the Dream Outdoors podcast on your favorite social media platforms, including Facebook, YouTube, Instagram, and TikTok.